But we do want to say hello to Tom Gimbel, who is a frequent guest here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Tom.
Hey, John. How are you?
Tom is the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. Were you at the parade yesterday?
I wasn't. I live about 3.5 blocks away, and my kids are older, so I wasn't there. My brother was there for a little bit with his family, and obviously knew a lot of people there, but I wasn't there.
What are you hearing?
Same thing that I think is being reported on the TV. Just a lot of people that said it was a very surreal experience. You know, the people that were up close and saw the bloodshed, it's a very different experience than those that were even a block or two block away and heard the rat-a-tat-tat of the gunfire and ran. But, you know, the people that I've talked to had just said that, you know, seeing the people run and scary, it was, you know, nothing you could ever imagine.
Yeah, I have just been watching and listening to various posts today in social media and news outlets, and the velocity of the weapons, the damage that they do is really heartbreaking. I'll just leave it at that.
It's a very surreal feeling, I think, having it be in your town. I was talking to some friends, and I just said, you know, it could have been Hinsdale or Elmhurst or Lake Forest or Glencoe or any other suburb, and it should have the same impact on you, but when it is your town, it does feel a little bit different. But at the end of the day, you know, we're the next Parkland, Florida, and when you see your town as the byline for the front page of the Journal or the Tribune or the New York Times, it's very surreal, but it really shouldn't change things. The violence and the terribleness of it all is just as bad, whether it's in another state or in your own town. And I guess it slaps you in the face a little bit that we need to do something about this, but it's a terrible, terrible thing.
That's something Steve Bertrand was pointing out, because Steve lives up that way as well, not in Highland Park per se, but he said that when it's that close to you physically, I mean, now you know the people, you know the streets, you know the addresses, but it just feels a little more impactful because it's almost geographically closer to you. As bad as Uvalde or Parkland or Columbine were, those were over there. They weren't right here, and this one was right here. So that way it seems more real, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, I took my dog for a walk yesterday afternoon, and again, like I said, I'm just a few blocks away, and there was the sounds of silence, if that makes sense. It was eerily quiet, and you walked up, and the camera crews are there, and the police are there, and the military's walking around, and no one's saying. I mean, it was the quiet of almost being like in a library, even though there was probably a dozen or so people like me just who had walked up, and then these other folks. But the talking was in whispers, even people on the phone. And to see the yellow tape and the chairs laying there, it's one thing to see it on TV, but it is when it's your streets and you've been walking. You know, I'm 50 years old. I grew up there, and then I came back and raised my kids there. So I've been there almost my whole life. And seeing it is different, but I come back to it, John, and you and I have had this conversation. This is happening not that way, not a mass shooting, but you know, how many people were shot and killed on the South Side this weekend?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, and for the people that say, oh, you can get the guns illegally, you can get them legally and illegally. We can only win the fights we fight, and we've got to take care of the craziness of semi-automatic weapons that are out there and start there. And make sure this doesn't happen to another community within your listening distance and outside the listening distance. It's crazy.
Any observations about any of that or the markets in general today, Tom?
Well, I don't think the markets are related to that. I think that your texter is dead on. And it is, you know, I'm really tired of the constitutional argument about it, John, because our founding fathers didn't actually say that we had the right to bear arms forever. They actually wrote in the Constitution that we could make amendments because the Constitution didn't foresee the future. And we can have amendments because it's not a perfect document. And when you see these things, it's about time we have change. And, you know, I am a self-proclaimed centrist, as you know. I'm fiscally conservative and I'm socially liberal. and I'm a man without a party these days. But when it comes down to the future of our country and what we need to do, there needs to be some changes. And the best way to do that is elect legislators who will create an amendment on certain things that we need to change. And if gun violence is at a point where we need to do something, we need to try something different.
I think that's an interesting point. And incidentally, I think that if you talk about the Constitution, I don't know why we don't say often enough in order to maintain a well-regulated militia. Never mind that muskets took 30 seconds to load, but it was in order to maintain a well-regulated militia. I don't think our founding fathers at all thought that this was what we should have in terms of gun access.
And I don't think anybody's, you never hear the argument on maybe you do in some extreme situations, but I've never heard people say in a logical conversation, there shouldn't be rifles and there shouldn't be shotguns, right? I mean, no one has ever argued against people having hunting equipment. You know, the idea of not having semi-automatic weapons, the not having magazines for handguns, there's certain things that can allow for destructions that people don't need, or at the very least, people under the age of 21 or 25 don't need. That you should be, if you have to take a test for a driver's license every 5 years or whatever it is, you should have to do that for a gun.
Ben Bradley has posted a picture that WGN-TV has obtained of the suspected parade shooter dressed as a woman, and that does look like his face, but he does have a wig on, and it looks like it's kind of a grainy photo, but women's clothing as he sought to blend back into the crowd after he shot from that rooftop. He came down, got in the crowd, walked away, went back to his mom's house, got in the car. Kathy had a question or a comment. You're on WGN. Hi, Kathy. What can we do for you?
Hi, John. My comment is that there was a witness who was interviewed on WGN, which I couldn't break away from yesterday, TV, and he went into detail about how he came face-to-face and stared eye-to-eye with the shooter at ground level. And my concern is there actually a second mass murderer out there, or did this so-called witness just make up this story?
Why
isn't it being talked about more?
You said that he came face to face with the shooter, right?
He said the shooter.
Okay, but I'm not understanding your question then.
Well, the question is there a second shooter that isn't being talked about or covered at large?
Yeah, although that's my confusion. Why do you assume there's a second shooter? I thought you said that he came face-to-face with, in fact, the person we do believe did the shooting. Or is this somebody else you're talking about?
Well, this would be somebody else because the witness said that he was standing next to the shooter at ground level
as he
was shooting people.
It's
on WGN-TV News.
Thank you for that. I'll go back and more closely scrutinize that. We broadcast live today the press conference, and they said they have no reason to believe that anybody else was involved, that nobody else aided or abetted him, that there wasn't another participant who got him the guns. He was able to legally acquire the guns.
Yeah, that was very clearly stated by the police an hour or so ago that he acted alone.
Okay. Thanks for the phone call on that and the question, Kathy. That's all we know so far. Tom, I'm getting close to the bottom of the hour here. Any last observations from you, a native of Highland Park?
Yeah, I think so often everybody, and rightfully so, to have a thought or an opinion, and that's fine. But I think between Twitter and social media and all the thing, there's so many theories rolling around. I'll leave you with this. After all said and done, and the people who were there, you know, it's so traumatic. When you're sitting on the couch with your children and they're waiting for texts from friends to see if anybody they know was shot or God forbid, killed, it really does hit you in the gut. And I think there's people criticizing the parents and criticizing the this and the that and praising this and that. And at the end of the day, the situation is what the situation is. And there's always 20/20 hindsight, but we've got to do what we can legally to hopefully prevent this. And there are other reasons in addition to mental illness and that. And we just can't be careful of casting too many stones, and let's hug our family and our children, and hopefully we can be smart enough to elect legislators who will protect us in the future, because that's the chance that we have for a safer society.
We'll talk business next week, Tom.
I look forward to it, John. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Tom Gimbel from LaSalle Network. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN, and Jim Dahlke, the senior editor at Chicago Inno, writing about a couple of companies that I think are pretty funny and fun. Let's start, though, with Chime, which you've talked about with us before, Jim. What's the latest with Chime?
Hey, John, thanks for having me. Yeah, Chime, fast-growing fintech firm. They are a digital banking startup valued at over $25 billion, founded back in 2012. They are growing their Chicago presence. So their first Chicago employees began in late 2019, just with three folks, and got up to about six in March of 2020. And then, of course, the COVID pandemic happened and sent everybody home and offices closed. But Chime has still grown over the last couple of years and has quietly gotten its headcount up to over 200 folks here in Chicago. And now they are planning to open a new office here. So later this quarter, they're going to open a new 26,000 square foot space at 333 North Green out in Fulton Market, adding to many tech companies that are choosing the West Loop neighborhood to kind of set up shop in Chicago, as that market continues to be a hot spot for all types of businesses, especially tech firms. So interesting to see Chime choose Chicago as a place for growth. It's just their third office outside of their San Francisco headquarters and their space in Vancouver.
What do they do again?
So this is digital banking. So you can think everything you can get with your traditional brick and mortar bank. The Chime app is doing that digitally for you. So they're kind of a big part of this sort of online banking revolution here. They also work with some brick and mortar banks as well. So digital banking startup. They have plans to IPO, they said earlier this year. Those plans are now shelved, as many IPO plans have sort of done as the tech stocks have tumbled in recent months. So TBD on a Chime IPO, but they last raised funding in 2021 at a $25 billion valuation.
You mentioned them moving to the West Loop. Does it matter to you much, or is it of much significance other than space? Google going from the old post office maybe to the Thompson Center and acquiring that space? Is that part of a trend or meaningful other than they just needed a spot?
Certainly meaningful for the Loop's business district. I think Fulton Market will continue to be a very, very hot space for tech companies, both large and small. We're seeing, everybody from large tech companies like Chime to very small tech companies and startups choose Fulton Market as a place to set up shop. So I don't see the Fulton Market area slowing down any for tech companies, but yeah, certainly a major win for the Loop business district if Google does indeed take up the Thompson Center.
What's Improvy do?
Yeah, so Improvy, a startup that fits the bill of companies we often write about that are taking what it was originally a non-digital service and making it digital. So what Improvy does is helps you find house painters. They've created a marketplace to connect homeowners with painting contractors, allowing you to compare multiple painters, read reviews, and select a contractor all from one place. They have some tech tools, too, like virtual design consultations that work with some different painting companies to help you select a painting color that's going to fit best. And it does interior, exterior, drywall repair, all kinds of different painting services. And last week, they just raised $2.8 million from a handful of local investors in town to get ready to grow. So, yeah, interesting local Chicago startup that's taking making it easier to find a painter.
Interesting that they would just be interested in painters. Are they going to do plumbers, electricians, carpenters, that sort of thing?
It certainly seems that way. So, yeah, they're going to start with painters and kind of grow from there. The founder has a wide background in sort of different types of services like that. So I would definitely expect painting to kind of be the first step here and then grow out from there.
I will advise, if he asks me for my reaction to all of this, I will tell him that there, I know he knows this, there are sites out there that already do something like this, and a lot of them aren't very good, that they will say, oh, you need a plumber. Here's a bunch of plumbers or electricians or painters in your area. And then you click on, but it's they don't respond, or it's the engine just isn't that good. If they can make it efficient and attentive, they may have something.
I agree. The execution here is key, and the quality control as well, right? So, like, everybody who's on the marketplace has to be of high quality, and time will tell if they're going to be able to draw a crowd here and get folks to jump onto their app. But I think they're onto something.
This is the one that made me chuckle, T-Bot. Talk about that.
Yeah, T-Bot, a Chicago startup, actually started in Toronto. So this is a tea-making robot. This thing is big and tall, about 6 feet tall. This started as a project from a PhD student out in Toronto, really as a way to make really unique tea blends. So this machine allows you to order a tea with different percentages of ingredients. You can order it with 20% Amaretto cherry, 30% peppermint, 50% cacao, for example. Really lets you kind of control the strength and even the temperature of the tea itself. So you're making kind of really unique blends of tea right from this machine. They started with kind of an approach for, hey, let's get this thing in malls and airports, but really found the business-to-business route was really lucrative for them. So Google came calling in 2015, got this machine in their Google Chicago office, and has absolutely loved it. Google has kept this thing in their building since then, and the company has continued to grow. So Chicago really was their entrance into the U.S. market, and the founder in Toronto is actually partnering with a local Chicago startup investor to get this thing off the ground, and they consider themselves a dual-headquartered company here, both in Toronto and Chicago. So the company is growing quickly. They got about 40 machines out in offices all across the U.S. and Canada. I think places like 1871 at the startup incubator here in Chicago, HubSpot out in Boston, McKinsey, lots of offices across the country now are starting to get this machine as folks kind of opt for something other than the pot of coffee for work.
Yeah, no kidding. All of us who are happy with coffee don't even think twice maybe about tea. But if you're a tea drinker, figure somebody outside the U.S. would see this market. Maybe there's a market for that in the USA too, huh?
They think that, you know, their advantage is that their teas are good. I've actually tried it myself at 1871. It was a good chance to get a chance to try the T-Bot in person. And you really can customize this thing. I mean, they, you know, sort of say you can make thousands of different types of blends. And these are just teas you aren't going to find anywhere else. You know, you can't get this percentage breakdown of all these different ingredients right necessarily at your local cafe. And their next step is allowing you to take that same blend that you're able to order at the office and order it at home, too. So the app allows you to order it, your drink at the office, but then you can get that same unique blend delivered right to the door. So, hey, if you're a hybrid worker, a couple days in the office, a couple days at home, still get that same tea.
Okay, Jim, nice to talk to you. Senior editor, Chicago Inno. You can find out more at chicagoinno.com. We'll talk next week, Jim.
Thanks, Sean.
Now let's talk to Steve Grzanich on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Illinois auto insurers made hundreds of millions more in profits during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic than they would have during a period of normal driving behavior. The data comes from state insurance regulators and was reported by Cranes. Motorists largely kept their vehicles parked during the lockdowns and as they worked from home. At Northbrook-based Allstate, the profit margin for the company's Illinois Fire and Casualty Unit was nearly 15% in 2020, even after it rebated 15% to policyholders. In 2019, Allstate's profit margin was just 3%. Two more of the top four auto insurers in Illinois, Progressive and Geico, saw similar windfalls. State Farm barely broke even. Another court ruling in favor of the Obama Presidential Center in Chicago. The Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals has affirmed an earlier ruling that cleared the way for the center's location in Jackson Park. Protect Our Parks filed a lawsuit in 2018 to block the center, citing environmental concerns. The organization claimed the city of Chicago and other government entities performed inadequate environmental reviews of the project. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And now that much-anticipated business of food. I hope that didn't sound sarcastic. Here's Steve Alexander.
As you mentioned earlier, John, the central Illinois farming town of Arthur is where the business of food is headed to today. And, gee, I suppose you could drive there in a Chevy if you wanted to. We are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Have you ever been to one of those office or company meetings where the boss stands up and says,
"We do have some news to share."
Uh-oh. Pete Stavros, the head of KKR, a private equity company that years earlier had bought the CHI Overhead Door Company in Arthur, Illinois, was announcing that the company had been sold. Would this be one of those stories where the soulless speculators from the big city cash out and crush the major employer of a tiny farming town? No. The $3 billion KKR was paid for CHI was shared with the company's several hundred employees, including office manager Rhonda Jameson.
This was a great day for Rhonda.
And it was a very good day for hourly workers who received checks averaging $175,000. And many long-term employees got over $750,000. And Pete Stavros told Leslie Picker of CNBC.
This isn't charity, it's not a gift. They drove an unbelievable amount of productivity in the business.
Arthur, population 2,500, is far from a company town that rises and falls based on how one industry is doing. Another large employer is Mastercraft Cabinets, and agriculture is a big driver of the local economy.
We claim to have some of the richest farmland in the Midwest.
And Village President Rod Randall says tourism is big, too, thanks to the Amish community, the largest and oldest in Illinois, dating back to the 1860s.
A lot of the Amish industries around here, and you can go into some of the wood shops, and they've actually have observation areas where you can look down and watch furniture being manufactured. And then recently, the Amish Heritage Center has grown just to the east of Arthur as a tourist attraction.
Located southeast of Decatur, about 30 minutes, or 3 hours south of Chicago, Arthur's motto is,
"You're a stranger only once."
And where hundreds of workers at CHI Overhead Door Company have much fatter bank accounts. By the way, a few days late, but June was National Garage Door Safety Month. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Andy Lansing is the CEO at Levy Restaurants, and Jake Melnix has got an anniversary coming up. Let's talk a little bit about that for a few minutes. Hi, Andy. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm here.
You sound terrific. Tell us about the anniversary and what you guys have cooked up.
Well, we're really excited. 20 years in the restaurant business is a major milestone. So we've got all sorts of things going on at the restaurant this month, from throwback menu items to throwback pricing. But it's really, in our view, a time just to celebrate a really fun concept that's been around for 20 years and has been consistent throughout those 20 years.
What's the concept? Describe Melnix for me.
So, you know, Melnix was the first bar, if you will, or corner tap that we ever did. We wanted to try something there that was a bar, and we sort of had three guiding principles. The first was, I have a saying that it's more fun to eat in a bar than it is to drink in a restaurant. I think when people find great food in a bar, it's really cool. We wanted to make sure that it was sort of something for everyone on the menu, that you could go there, and a lot of restaurants or bars struggle with that. It kind of caters to one specific demographic, and you know, from the first day we opened, even if you go in there today for lunch, you'll see construction workers at the bar with their hard hats as they're having a burger, and you'll see Michigan Avenue shoppers having big salads. So usually those people don't want to be in the same place with each other, but they, for 20 years, have coexisted there. And, you know, the last principle is we wanted it to sort of feel funky in there always, not junky. There's a fine line. And so that's sort of what we set out to do, and have tried to stay true to those principles throughout the years.
You guys are forward with the vegetarian stuff, too. Cauliflower is a hot entree these days. Literally an entree. What are you guys doing menu-wise?
Yeah, I mean, even though we always have tried to play to every taste, I mean, there was always healthy options at Jake's from day one. Certainly in recent years, we've incorporated a lot of the plant-based items, whether it's plant-based burgers or other things, or even, as you talked about, our buffalo cauliflower. So there's really, you can eat as healthy as you want there, and you can eat as junky as you want there.
Now, is it true that you guys have a wing that is so hot you had to get FDA approval to serve that to the general public?
That is 100% true, John.
I do not believe that. That is something you just make up to drive business.
Yeah, it sounds great, but we couldn't make it up. It was actually true. We wanted to create sort of what was not only the hottest wing, because I think anybody can make any food gratuitously hot, just hot. The key is to have something that's crazy hot, but that has great flavors, and that's what we what we set out to do with them. And we were really successful, and it's fun. People come in and they eat them, and they have to sign a tongue-in-cheek release. They wear a, they wear a fire hat. We give them a bell if they can't take it. They ring the bell, and we bring them out a cooling platter. So it's a real show to eat those wings.
Those aren't the ones, though, that the Today Show said were the best in the country, are they?
The Today Show loves our poncho wings, which is a very unique grilled wing that's very simple. It's sort of lemon juice, cayenne pepper, a little bit of garlic, and that's the one that people seem to go gaga over.
Yeah. So you're, so Jake Melnick's 20-year anniversary, that's this month. Is this a month-long celebration?
It is a month-long celebration, for sure.
Okay, and this is just off of Superior in Michigan Avenue, right?
Yeah, it's 41 East Superior, which is Wabash and Superior, and it's just that old kind of corner tap, friendly atmosphere and vibe.
I don't think there's enough storefront eating and drinking establishments on Michigan Avenue, State Street for that matter. Like, and some of the restaurants haven't opened after the pandemic anyway, but I think we need, like, you know, on TV shows, they show somebody popping into a hot dog joint on Michigan Avenue, not that those exist, but I think we do need more street-level access to good dining and drinking.
Well, I think we need more of that for sure, and I think what we need is more of sort of the local brands that, yes, can become iconic to the city as opposed to national chains. I'm not against national chains, but there are so many cities where it's all dominated by national chains, and I just don't want Chicago to become that.
Hey, congratulations. I am not going to try those super hot wings, but I'll try the other ones, okay?
That sounds great, John.
Congratulations, Andy. Our best to everybody over there.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Andy Lansing is the CEO at Levy Restaurants, and Jake Melnick's is at 41 East Superior, downtown Chicago.